Chapter 16, Project Management. At high-growth startups and in big tech, it's common for engineers of all levels to lead engineering projects. As an engineer, building up the skills for this is important in order to grow into senior and staff roles. As a tech lead or an engineer acting as one, leading projects is a regular task. So how do you do this efficiently and with confidence? In this chapter, we cover 1. Companies where engineers lead projects. 2. Why do we do project management? 3. Project kickoffs and milestones. 4. Software project physics. 5. Day-to-day project management. 6. Risk and dependencies. 7. Wrapping up projects. 1. Companies where engineers lead projects. Which tech companies empower software engineers to act as engineering leads for projects, even if they're below the senior or tech lead levels? Quite a few, actually. At most places, each team decides how it operates, and no particular working style is mandated. Here are some companies which I've confirmed have several teams where engineers lead projects, with support from managers and more experienced engineers. Shopify. This role is called IC Champion, Individual Contributor Champion. Amazon. Non-senior engineers often lead projects which are good fits in complexity terms. Atlassian. A common role fulfilled by mid-level engineers called feature lead. Microsoft. Many product teams operate like this. GitHub calls this role the DRI, directly responsible individual. X, formerly Twitter. Several product teams call this role the PTL, project tech lead. DAZN, sports streaming scale-up, calls this role the project captain. Klarna has teams experimenting with this approach. Trivago calls this role the tech driver. Skyscanner. Many teams have less experienced engineers shadow projects and then lead one. Thought Machine, a fintech scale-up, has project teams led by engineers while engineering managers lead component teams. Big Tech. Several teams at Meta, Google, Apple, and Uber use this approach. Apple merits a separate mention, as its co-founder Steve Jobs believed individual contributors, ICs, do the best job of managing. He said in a 1985 interview, "You know who the best managers are? They're the great individual contributors who never, ever want to be a manager, but decide they have to be a manager because no one else will do as good of a job as them." 2. Why do we do project management? Project is the word many organizations use to coordinate efforts which move the needle of a specific business goal. They may take as little as a couple of weeks, but often last months from start to finish, while long-term efforts could span years. However, at tech companies with healthy engineering cultures, engineers ship business value multiple times a day and ship projects considered complete every few months. But could we just get the work done without any form of project management? If you are working by yourself and depending on no other teams, and none depend on your work, then go ahead. You can sketch out a plan for the functionality you want to build, code it, ship it, and it's done. You probably don't need any tools mentioned in this chapter. However, when more people are working together, there's a need for goals, being clear what problem you are solving with this project. Planning. Having some high-level idea of how to solve this problem. In some cases, a more formal specification could come before the plan itself. Coordination. Being clear who does what. Keeping everyone on the same page. As work progresses, keeping all team members informed about how things are going. Managing risks, changes, and delays. Building software is full of risks because we often build solutions in new, untried ways. Project management approaches offer tactics for all of the above and help to answer the question many of us engineers dread: how long will it take? Dates and deadlines are important for projects, whether or not we as engineers like this. This is especially true in environments where the business uses dates to coordinate and communicate between functions. Most of big tech and most high-growth startups are date-driven enterprises. As I write in the article, "Yes, you should estimate software projects," Estimates matter because most people and businesses are date-driven. Publicly traded companies plan and budget based on quarters. They also decide how much to invest in projects and people after asking, how long does it take to launch? Private venture-funded companies try to get new features out in time to help with the next fundraising round. Yes, some businesses are not very date-driven, but they are rare. Private, profitable lifestyle businesses and public bodies are perhaps the best examples of entities that don't care as much about dates. What we cover in this chapter applies to more complex work units in any framework and is not necessary for simple, well-defined pieces of work. Any sizable piece of work involving the coordination of people and working across several dependencies is a project which can benefit from the approaches covered here. 3. Project kickoffs and milestones. I've observed that a major reason why projects fail is by starting with misaligned expectations. This often only becomes apparent near the end of a project, just when the engineering team thinks they're done. Kickoffs help ensure there are no misunderstandings at the outset, which can later cause large chunks of work to be thrown out or redone entirely. I think of kickoffs as events where big questions are clarified with relevant stakeholders. The best way to de-risk any project is to do a kickoff in which all project stakeholders confirm they understand the goals and approach of the project and endorse the high-level plan. How you prepare for a kickoff depends on the complexity of the project and the number of stakeholders. In my view, a written document is essential to circulate beforehand for people to add comments to. This approach is a must in any organization where teams work remote or partially remote. A product requirements document, PRD, is a common format for describing a project's why and what. While engineering should be involved to some extent, it's not about engineering details at this stage. Rather, it's about aligning all product, engineering, design, data science, and business stakeholders. You can see some examples of PRDs at various tech companies by going to vindiac.com/posts/best-PRD-templates-from-companies-we-adore. The project kickoff. The project kickoff aligns everyone with the why and what. This kickoff is when people go through the plans and tackle questions. A successful kickoff is one in which the project lead asks, are there any questions about what the project is, why we're doing it, or how we are approaching it? Ideally, everyone answers that all is clear, based on the information available. In practice, I've seen a room erupt with questions, which proves the kickoff's value. It's better to settle questions before the team starts building than afterward when changes might mean previous efforts are binned. I recommend the kickoff to be a meeting. Dedicate 10 minutes to reading the proposal document or for the project lead to walk attendees through it. If running an online meeting, consider asking participants to turn on video so the meeting facilitator can get visual cues and spot when people could be disagreeing and when a little nudge could help those people speak up. As counterintuitive as it sounds, I recommend inviting all stakeholders with a relevant say to join the kickoff. This means inviting everyone from the business, including customer support. More people in a meeting makes it more expensive time-wise, but this is okay because it's an opportunity to capture misunderstandings early and avoid wasted effort later. The engineering kickoff. The engineering kickoff follows the project kickoff. Its goal is to align engineers on the how, and involves the engineering team and relevant engineering stakeholders like the data science, machine learning, or infrastructure teams. Once the business goals and high-level approaches are clarified, engineers dive into planning exactly how this approach will work. This varies. Some teams do whiteboarding, sometimes virtual. Most of big tech and many startups kick off with engineering planning documents that are circulated like RFCs, request for comment, ERDs, engineering requirement documents, or ADRs, architecture decision records. I'm a big fan of writing down the agreed engineering approach because it has so many benefits. It forces engineers to clearly describe a proposed approach, thereby limiting misunderstandings. The plan can be circulated for comments, broadening its reach. And the planning document will be available later for those working on the project to aid their onboarding and understanding of decisions made. establishing milestones. The goal of this step is to align the engineering team with the when. Several engineering teams combine their planning with the project's milestones and estimations, but I prefer these two to be separate. The reason is that if you set engineering's dates and milestones at the planning stage, there's a high chance the team will immediately add shortcuts and make decisions that create tech debt. By doing the engineering planning separately, the team should devise a plan that makes the best possible decisions for the long-term health of the systems and services, not just for the project. With an engineering plan in place, it's time to get a sense of shippable milestones. The more granular these milestones, the better. This is because all estimates will be off by some degree, and the only way to really know by how much is to hit a milestone. Also, these have the intrinsic value of bringing the project's final goal a step closer, with each one hit. Once milestones are agreed, the team does a breakdown of the work each one needs, with a rough time estimate. Some teams use T-shirt sizes as units of time. Others prefer to do the planning poker approach with Fibonacci numbers as estimates for complexity. 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, etc. While others prefer engineering days. In the end, whichever method you choose at a date-driven company, you'll have to give a rough date estimate for when this milestone should be achieved. I prefer milestones to be small enough to be achieved in no longer than a few weeks. If milestones involve lengthy chunks of work, I'd challenge the team to set intermediary milestones that capture smaller parts. Ensure estimates aren't binding. Software projects are full of unknowns and risks, and the most anyone can reasonably ask of a team is for a rough idea of how long things should take based on the best information. As a project progresses, risks and challenges will pop up, which add more complexity and change the estimates. The business will, of course, want to know the final shipping date. As project lead, there are several ways you can go about sharing this estimated deadline. Many leads add padding or inflate the estimates by adding time, then communicate this externally. I always prefer to add some padding, but also to educate the business that there's no such thing as a fixed date. Commit to the business that they will get regular updates. And then, as the project passes its milestones, you can give dates with increasing confidence. In this sense, software engineering and construction work are similar. Anyone who's contracted house building or renovation knows that dates and budgets are estimates at best. It almost always ends up taking longer than expected. Software projects are no different. Of course, there are times when the dates are fixed. For example, some companies have upfront communicated fixed release dates. Within finance and banking, deadlines to make changes and comply with new regulations are tied to dates. In such cases, the date is not negotiable, but in turn, the scope of the work could be reduced. In such scenarios, it's especially important to understand what matters for the business. See Part 5, Chapter 21, Understanding the Business, for more on this topic. 4. Software project physics. While the software we build is virtual, there's a law of software physics which I've found is strikingly accurate. Imagine a triangle. At the first point, you have timeline. At the second point, scope. At the third, people. If one of these changes, at least one other also needs to change in response. In this way, the timeline, scope, and people on the project are all connected. If this triangle sounds familiar, it's probably because it resembles the project management triangle, which is a commonly used model to describe the connection between cost, time, scope, and quality. For teams in big tech and at high-growth startups, I found quality is rarely up for negotiation. Timeline and scope are much more so. The engineers who work on the project, its timeline and scope, are all connected. If one changes, at least one other needs to change in turn. When scope increases. When the scope grows, then the timeline needs to also increase, or more people need to be assigned to the project. The first option, of the timeline growing in line with scope, is straightforward, but the business usually doesn't like it. For the second option of adding more people, the extra hours and overtime increases the people component of the project triangle. Note, the number of team members doesn't have to increase and can be the same as before if existing teammates work more hours. One upside is that they have full context and don't need onboarding. But make no mistake, more labor hours are now going into the project than was planned. Adding more people to a project without slowing it down is challenging, but is possible in rare cases. Whenever I say this, Brooks' Law is regularly quoted at me. It's from the book The Mythical Man Month by Fred Brooks. Adding manpower to a late software project makes it later. I would not treat this as a universal truth. It's not correct for projects where onboarding takes little time, the work is broken down and can be parallelized, when people with domain understanding are pulled in, and where you add few people relative to team size. Pulling in engineers familiar with the code base to pick up standalone work can speed up projects. I've also succeeded in delivering projects which increased in scope relative to the original timeline by adding new engineers. However, this always involves hard trade-offs in onboarding time and communications overhead. Onboarding takes time and can take the focus off the team. The easier the onboarding, for example, by using an internal open source model, and the more domain knowledge new joiners have, the less expensive it is. The lower the communication overhead is, with clear documentation, a clean code base, and asynchronous processes, then the lower the impact of onboarding is. The reality is that for most projects of expanding scope, pulling in extra engineers isn't possible, as they'd need to come from another team or project, and it's rare that there are idle engineers waiting around on standby. And for many projects, the work might not be sufficiently parallelizable for new joiners to simply pick it up. Be aware of different ways of getting more people, how overtime equals more labor power, and to recruit engineers with domain knowledge only if they'd speed up a specific project. To state the obvious, doubling the number of engineers won't cut the time to completion in half. However, if those engineers have domain knowledge and the work can be split up, then it can reduce the time frame when all of this is done smartly. When the project timeline changes. If the project's deadline is moved closer, something needs to give. The likelihood is that the scope is cut. What's less obvious is that the people dimension almost always increases in this situation, as with a tighter deadline, people often start to do longer hours or are asked to put in more time, so the project's total people hours increases without additional people. What about adding more engineers to a project with a shortened timeline? This is possible, but the time to onboard a new member can make it impractical, unless the deadline is months away. When fewer people can work on a project. Unexpected issues may mean fewer people work on a project, such as team members being pulled away to other work, illness, etc. When there are fewer people, the scope needs to decrease, the timeline should be increased, or more people added. Changing the scope or timeline is easiest here. Adding more people hours can be done by pushing the reduced team to do more hours. However, this approach can backfire if overtime becomes a regular occurrence and people burn out. Pushing overtime on a team often increases mistakes as people work longer and ship more bugs, often without noticing. Don't forget, one exhausted person can have a net negative effect on a project by introducing avoidable regressions which they would not have had they gotten enough rest. It's useful to be aware of the relationship between scope, timeline, and people, and know that if one component changes, then at least one other should also change. As the project lead, this mental model can help you negotiate more realistic trade-offs with the business. When people working on the project change. A less intuitive case is when a new person joins the team. Does it affect the timeline, for example, by making it shorter because more people are on the project? Frequently, the timeline will not change, or it could even be extended. If a new team member is also new to the company, the onboarding could take long enough to distract team members and slow the project down. If onboarding is quick and the new joiner hits the ground running, then they could speed things up. There are companies where new joiners ship to production by the end of day two, but at some places it takes 1 to 2 months to get the first change into production. The faster a new joiner's onboarding is, the more likely it is that adding them will speed up projects. Similarly, If team members are replaced, for example, when someone transfers out of the project and someone else transfers in, the length of onboarding will influence whether or not timelines are impacted. There are teams where this is minimal, but on other teams, it is a major hit. Take offboarding and onboarding time into account and communicate that the scope or timeline of the project could change as a result. 5. Day-to-day project management. There are a couple of widespread project management approaches that many engineering teams utilize. Scrum, usually for sprints lasting a week or more. A team usually does planning and estimation sessions, regular grooming sessions to prioritize the work in preparation for the next sprint, and sprint retrospectives. A big benefit of Scrum is structure, but this approach may be too rigid for experienced teams. Kanban, an approach where the next piece of work is the one that's at the top of the backlog, and a team puts in place some kind of planning and prioritization sessions. A major benefit of Kanban is flexibility, and it's not an issue if priorities change. The downside is a lack of structure, which less experienced teams might prefer is in place. Scrumban, a mix of approaches from Scrum and Kanban, using approaches from each as appropriate. This usually means a less rigid approach to sprints and more flexibility in picking up high-priority work. I don't believe in being prescriptive on how to run projects. One approach I recommend is to experiment with different ways of doing things. If the software engineering field taught me anything over the course of 2 decades, it's that an effective approach for one team probably won't work so well somewhere else. Try out approaches you think will work, including ones you're unsure about. Try opinionated project management approaches, different stand-up formats, including having none at all, and new ways to estimate or track work. There are few better ways to learn than by doing. My suggestions of things to pay attention to, whatever approach you take. Is everyone on the same page? Ensure there's a way to check this. Few things better indicate a project is failing than when the answer is no. Keep the team and yourself accountable to what's been agreed. Few things promote accountability better than writing things down and people signing it. This is why a weekly status email signed on behalf of the whole team works well for accountability. Expect and encourage team members to speak up if they feel they don't want to sign up. Delegate generously as a project lead. Delegate upwards to your manager and sideways to people supporting you. Consider delegating to team members and offering leadership opportunities they want to take on. Iterations and feedback. The more frequent, the better. The waterfall model of software development fails because feedback comes years after planning started. The more frequently you can get feedback on the true status of a project, the more likely you are to stay on track. This is why having short iterations, small milestones, and frequent feedback is a solid framework for success. Retrospective meetings every few weeks can help identify what works well, what to improve, and how. Expect the unexpected. Call out risks as soon as you notice them. More on this later. Cut corners when needed and use your judgment about when this is necessary. Do not forget the big picture and the project's ultimate goal. The goal isn't to write code, complete tickets, or output work at a certain velocity. The goal is something related to the business, so state it frequently and focus on achieving it, instead of doing busy work that doesn't get you closer to completion. Taking decisions as a tech lead. The tech lead role, or even the project lead role, has the downside of being ambiguous. It's clear a team manager can and does make team-level decisions, and it's equally clear engineers make some decisions of their own. But what about the tech lead? Do they need to make project-level or team-level decisions? And if so, when? Do they go ahead and make them or consult with their manager and defer to them? For example, a project is 2 weeks away from the shipping date when an engineer discovers the framework they were planning to use is missing a key feature. So either the feature needs to be changed, making it more limited, or you need to build a bunch of custom code, but doing this will push back the project's timeline. The engineer looks to you as the tech lead to make a decision. One choice impacts the scope, the other impacts the timeline. Can you make this decision alone, Or do you need to consult stakeholders like your manager, the product manager, or the business? Don't forget to consult the rest of the team before deciding. Less experienced tech leads often assume that if a decision needs to be made, they should make it. But are they in the best position to do so? Consider empowering the person with the most information to decide. In this example, the engineer suggesting the two workarounds might already have a suggestion they think is the best option. Help them verbalize which one it is and then support it while deciding whether to inform or consult stakeholders. Inform stakeholders. When making a decision which impacts a project's timeline, scope, or people, always consider informing stakeholders. This means sharing the situation, aka the problem, potential solutions on the table with trade-offs, the approach the team has chosen, which you support. Can you decide or should you consult first? As a tech lead, you're expected to move things forward and not defer to stakeholders or your manager about every decision. Use your judgment for whether it's fine to make a decision on the spot or if it's better to consult stakeholders or your manager first. Over time, you'll build up trust with stakeholders and be able to predict when a decision is small enough in scope to merely inform others of it and when its impact means you should consult others. 6. Risks and dependencies. As mentioned earlier, building a new piece of software and constructing a new apartment complex have parallels. Both often take longer than planned and run over budget. No two projects are identical. Materials and technologies vary, as do constraints and challenges. Construction and software engineering also share in common that some risks are only revealed after work begins, which you need to respond to as you go. Let's go through the 8 most common types of risks in software projects and how to mitigate them. Technology risk, engineering dependencies, non-engineering dependencies, missing decisions or context dependencies, unrealistic timeline, not enough people or bandwidth, a surprise midway through the project, no idea how long something will actually take. Risk number 1, technology risk. When you have not used a framework, library, language, or service before, and there are unknown unknowns, which are risks you're not even aware exist. How to mitigate. Prototype. Spend a day or two building something related to what you need to do. As you prototype, you'll discover gaps, risks, and unknowns. Review the roadmap and tooling. Go through tooling, resources, and feedback. Are there breaking changes ahead? How stable is this technology, and how much maintenance and/or investment does it have? Evaluate unstable frameworks and tools. You may be tempted to use an unstable version of libraries, frameworks, or APIs, so evaluate how risky this instability is. There will be cases when the risk is acceptable because using the latest stable enough version means you won't have to update to it when it becomes more stable. Consider alternatives to something that's bound to change a lot. This is a trade-off between using something new, interesting, and innovative versus something guaranteed to reliably work. Risk number 2, engineering dependencies. When you cannot make progress until an engineering team makes a change to a service, library, or framework they own. How to mitigate. Talk with the other team for a sense of what needs doing. Offer to do the work yourself, assuming there's an internal open source model. Don't underestimate the time this will take, as you need context on their services and to take constraints into account. Expect to have lots of constraints if a platform team owns what you need to modify. Platform teams need to ensure their changes don't break any customers. Mock around this dependency to unblock yourself and make progress while the other team builds. Remove this dependency from the critical path, for example, by building your own simpler version, and remember you will need to maintain what you build. Carefully consider the maintenance burden if you choose this path. Swarm as a team. Get the whole team involved in solving the problem. This can work wonders on truly hard problems and unite the team. Pull in help from above by escalating to managers to help prioritize work on the other team's roadmap. Before doing this, I suggest always trying engineer-to-engineer communication. Risk number 3, Non-engineering dependencies. This is when you cannot make progress without information or sign-off from a non-engineering team. How to mitigate. Talk with the team and outline what you need, why, and what the impact will be if they don't take action. Can you work around this team? For example, if it's a design dependency, can you mock up something as a placeholder? Pull in help from above if needed, such as the PM or EM, but share the right context and recognize the difficulties or constraints the team has. Risk number 4, missing decisions or context dependencies. When you're unsure how or what to build, or the why of the work is unclear. I know only one way to mitigate this risk. Refuse to start work until you understand the context or have the decisions. Tell stakeholders what exactly you need from them before you can progress. It's doing a disservice to the team, the company, and yourself to start work on something about which fundamental questions remain unanswered. Ensure you have a clear picture of what to do and why. Start work only when this is clear. Risk number 5, unrealistic timeline. This typically happens when a completion date is handed down from above without input from the team, with a short timeline you're uncomfortable committing to. How to mitigate. Break down with rough estimates the work that needs to get done so you have something to discuss. Offer trade-offs that help meet the timeline, reduce scope, and consider adding more engineers to the project. Don't be afraid to think outside the box. Here are a couple of examples of how to approach managers with such suggestions. Instead of a functional chat, we could ship a button that captures a message and opens a Zendesk ticket using basic automation. Then we can meet the deadline. Well, if we can hit pause on all the other projects my team is doing and get 2 senior Android engineers to shift over for the next 2 months and pause retiring the Xeno service so we don't need to migrate to Athena, then and only then we might have a chance of making this deadline. Alternatively, we leave things as is and push the timeline back by 2 months or cut the scope so that we don't ship chat. Refuse to accept top-down deadlines. If you're a manager, protect your team and have them come up with a time pressure-free estimate. Be clear what you can and cannot do with your constraints. Risk number 6, not enough people or bandwidth. With all the other work going on, the team cannot realistically take on another project, but leadership says there's no choice. How to mitigate. Be clear on how many efforts and/or projects your team can handle at one time. Basically, clarify what your typical output is. Offer to drop other currently top priority projects, but be clear on the impact. Take this response as an example. Look, if you convince the chief product officer that we can stop working on Project Xeno, we can take on this other project. However, even if we do so, stopping work will be a blow to team morale and the context switch will add several weeks to the Xeno work. I need the CPO personally telling me she is okay with the team dropping this work, taking the hit to morale, and adding 4 weeks to Xeno. Risk number 7, a surprise midway through the project. Building software is full of surprises, and things come out of the blue unexpectedly and unpredictably. How to mitigate. What type of risk is it? See if any of the previous mitigation approaches work. Can it be worked around or ignored? It might be a false alarm, so investigate. Should the timeline be extended? This is the most sensible approach, and the answer is more often yes than many people expect. Can you take on tech, architecture, or process debt in doing a quick fix and only do a proper fix at the end of the project? The risk here is that the fix never gets done, so take responsibility for getting it prioritized. Risk number 8. No true idea how long something will actually take. This is a common risk. However, it's one that's often invisible to leadership because all they see is the estimate, which is often a stab in the dark. How to mitigate. Figure out what type of risk this really is. In most cases, it's a technology risk, something you've not used or done before. Can you break it down into smaller pieces, splitting off well-understood things from unknowns? Prototype or get more information on the underlying challenge. You could also time box this as a research activity, sometimes referred to as doing a spike. Discovering new risks and building software in new ways go hand in hand. Instead of trying to eliminate risks, accept they will exist. Learn to differentiate between major and minor risks, and keep your cool when you find new ones. Keep the law of software project physics in mind, and if the new risk increases the scope, then know you have to either cut the scope, lengthen the timeline, or find a way to add more labor to the project. 7. Wrapping up projects. I've seen many great project kickoffs, but far fewer good wrap-ups. Failing to properly wrap up projects has drawbacks. The team often doesn't get credit for good work they've done. Also, there's no celebration. Team members get pulled into work on other projects, and the final stage of the project, typically the rollout, is done ad hoc. Without a wrap-up, there's no reflection on how the project went, and team members don't internalize learnings. A proper wrap-up for a project is just as important as a good kickoff. It's a win for everyone. Project stakeholders, even those unaware of the project, the team which owns the project, everyone working on it, and the project lead, too. What does a good wrap-up look like? Clarity on what done means. This is where the kickoff is important. Done should be clear from the start. With clarity in place, it's easy enough to decide when to declare completion. Consider doing a retrospective with the team. At the end of the project, it's good to reflect on what went well, talk through what could have been better, and collect learnings. Choose a retrospective format that resonates with you. If you're a project lead, you can run this retrospective, or support someone in facilitating the discussion to help them grow. Write a final project update for a wider group. Send this out to any team which might have an interest in the project, as well as project stakeholders. Write a concise summary of why people should care, what the impact or expected impact is, summarize the work, highlight key contributors, and link to details. Get feedback on this final update from others before distributing it. For example, show the document to your product manager. Ask them to point out what's unclear and for one improvement suggestion. You could solicit similar feedback from other engineering managers or product managers, or someone in the company who you've read good status update emails from. People interested in the project should find your final update easy to read. So follow the advice in the issue of my newsletter titled Becoming a Better Writer and get feedback pre-publication. Time the final update for release soon after the project group disbands. There are projects where you need to wait weeks or months for concrete results. I suggest writing a final update not long after the project team moves on to other things. Use your judgment, but I found raising awareness that a project is starting to go live and offering ways for people to track its results is more efficient than waiting until the project is rolled out and all results are in and processed. Spotlight all team members and anyone who meaningfully helped. A final project update email is the place to praise people by name, and in the chat channel as well. Also, if there's the chance to present the project at a company talk or event, do the same thing there. Make sure not to omit key contributors, which is why pre-publication feedback is good. Celebrate with the project team. This is a great opportunity to let off steam and bond as a group. It can involve going out for dinner as a team or to a fun event. For remote teams, celebrating is more tricky, but could involve shipping gifts to people, sending a virtual gift card, or doing a remote toast with everyone on a call. What about projects which fail more than succeed? Sooner or later, you'll work on a project that is objectively a failure. For me, this was a project where we got all the way to beta testing. At that stage, we had to admit that we could never ship the project as it was. We also realized that addressing the problems we saw would be a much bigger task than the project itself. Nonetheless, we did a wrap-up to recognize our work and ended on a positive note. Here's what we did. Close with positivity. Yes, we failed to achieve the business objective. However, we succeeded in building and shipping a version of the project. We started the wrap-up by acknowledging it was complete and that we'd done the work we signed up for. Share learnings. The project did not move the needle in the way the business needed, but we learned several reasons why not. We shared these learnings after a long retrospective and a period of reflection. Part of the wrap-up email was a summary of learnings. Share small wins. There's a high chance the work contains partial successes and that there were some wins along the way. In our wrap-up, we highlighted these and thanked team members for their work. You cannot fully control the business outcomes of any project, but as project lead, you have a big influence on the wrapping up of an unsuccessful project. Learn the lessons and acknowledge the good work and wins you all shared on the journey. Ensure you apply those learnings next time.